Welcome into this Golf Channel podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray, joined by quite the team here as we close the 99th PGA Championship. Senior writer Ryan Labner, associate editor Nick Menta. Thank you, boys, for joining me as we literally burn the midnight oil here.
It is 12:15.
It is. See, look at you with the timestamp and everything. But Justin Thomas is officially a major champion.
Yep.
We're going to let that sink in. Quite the round that he completed at Quail Hollow Club. Lab, I'll kick it over to you just to give me your overall thoughts and impressions from the day that was and the week that was here in beautiful, balmy, humid Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, I was just really impressed with the way that Justin Thomas played in the final round of Quail Hollow. I think we did the punch shot on Saturday night asking who we thought we were going to win. And for me, it was Hideki, and it really wasn't even that close. I think a couple of people picked Kisner just because he had that one shot lead. But man, Justin Thomas was basically flawless from the third hole until the 17th hole, when a lot of guys showed some nerves. They showed, they made birdies, but they still just couldn't quite take it to that next level. Justin Thomas was flawless, and to shoot 68 on this golf course with all that pressure, the second to last group, really impressive.
I believe one person in our group of four writers did, in fact, have Justin Thomas. That would be Nick. So I'm going to kick it over to him with, I guess your takeaways from being right for the day. How about that?
I was also the same guy who, at the beginning of the week, said that Hideki Matsuyama couldn't possibly follow up. And, you know, he was there for...
I also picked Rory to win.
Yeah.
So
there for
we're going to be keeping
week,
score so here.
Fair enough. You know, the golf course, Quail Hollow, obviously undergoes a redesign. And it took a lot of guff, let's call it, for the first 3 days. Guys were unhappy. The rough was too high.
It was horrible.
In spots.
Yeah. Let's just call it this championship was terrible for 3 days. Let's just be honest.
And yet, on the back nine on Sunday, this place absolutely
very
delivered.
Satisfying. We feel satisfied now on Sunday night after what transpired on Sunday. This final round saved it completely.
Yeah, and you'll see, you know, competitive team play come back here in 2021, and that close from 14 through 18 is going to be absolutely tailor-made for match play. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I really enjoyed the golf course, and I'm excited to see a PGA come back here in the future.
You definitely are in the minority because the players did not enjoy it. They've completely sucked the joy out of this golf course. I completely agree. The last three holes are terrific, especially for a major. Literally anything can happen. There's water looming everywhere. But they've sucked the fun out of this golf course.
Thieves of joy.
Yes.
It's just a
joy thieves.
Term. Joy thieves. I will say, so this is my first time to Quail Hollow. The front nine is absolutely unremarkable in every way. And it is.
Yeah, it really is.
And it is difficult, and it is a fine test of golf, and it is just, I would never really want to play that week in, week out, day in, day out. I'm sure there are plenty of folks in Charlotte and Quail Hollow that love that course, but it's, I think you even notice it more by how fun and interesting the back nine is, especially once you get to 13, 14, and you get around that green mile and around that the water. I mean, that's a great closing stretch, and it just, you have to go through a long time, and you have to be patient to get to it.
The back nine really is good. I mean, it's a reachable par 5, a short par 4, a tough par 4, a really difficult par 3, and then the fun really starts. That's really yeah. where the tournament began every single day. I'm curious to see. I think there's going to have to be some changes before the Wells Fargo comes back in 2018 in May.
Blow that, up the
that fourth green needs to be blown up completely. There was some other holes that certainly rankled rankled some players, to be sure. The Bermuda rough off the fairways just did not go over well at all. I mean, even though it wasn't necessarily long, the ball sits right in the bottom, and you just have no play from there. It's just, hack-out rough just isn't fun.
So we have three players that finish in a tie for second, including Lou Oustazen, who just wins Twitter Sunday night with his lip sync.
Most amazing thing as he's
rising up. But I guess you've also got Ricky and Hideki T5. Nick, I'll kick it over to you. What are your thoughts? Who's the most important also-ran of that group that really kind of catches your attention?
I think the pressure builds on probably both Ricky and Hideki as two guys who continue to knock on that door but who have not yet gotten it done. And this is now the second major in a row we've seen Ricky Fowler standing behind the 18th green waiting to congratulate someone who is not Ricky Fowler.
And the second PGA in a row. He was out there with Jimmy Walker last year.
He's got a lot of friends.
Tons of friends.
So he'll continue to knock on the door. I continue to believe that he will get one. But every time he's sitting there congratulating someone other than himself, you start to wonder.
Well, I think that we were talking about this earlier tonight, that the math is an interesting paradox, because you sit there and you say Ricky Fowler's 28, he's going to be 29 in December. Odds are that he eventually gets 1, 2, 4, however many majors. But in any single week, the odds are always going to be against him, and there's have been a number of times, including this year, where you go into the week, you really talk yourself into Ricky Fowler come Tuesday, and then something goes awry. You know, sometimes it's been on Sunday this year. It was on Saturday this particular week when he really kind of gave it away down the stretch on the Green Mile during the third round after overcoming a triple bogey during the opening round. Lav, you know, eventually he's going to get there, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's just too many mistakes. I'm not sure if that's a caddy issue, if he's trying to be too aggressive or what the case is, but making the triple in the first round and then the bogey, double bogey finish really torpedoed his third round. Talking to him on the 18th green after Justin Thomas won, you can tell there's some underlying, he's just pissed off. He's so affable, and you know, he's got so many friends in the PGA Tour. You can tell this is kind of eating at him, though. I mean, how many times is he going to see his buddies get the glory, and he's just stuck there Snapchatting and you know, talking well about his friends and, you know, trying to boost them up the best he can. I think he's going to get there, but he is 28, and we're moving on, and every time he doesn't get it done, it just makes it harder.
Justin Thomas, just a few hours ago, spoke exactly to that point. He said, you know, I'm sitting there at Royal Birkdale watching Jordan Spieth capture the third leg of the career Grand Slam, and it made me mad to an extent. It made him hungry.
Jealous.
Said.
Yeah.
And he turned around 1 week later, or sorry, 1 month later, and now he's got Jordan Spieth in the receiving line waiting to congratulate him. And somebody at some point has to be there for Ricky Fowler, assuming he gets the job done. So
we shall see what happens with.
I think Hideki's a whole nother. I think he's a whole nother level.
I was going to say. So what do we make now of Hideki, who clearly came in on a heater after a 61 at Firestone, played really well through the first couple rounds. Jordan Spieth is sitting there on Saturday saying he's the guy to beat. Everyone kind of felt like this was the one that Hideki was going to get. And then after the third round, and certainly after the final round, it seemed like the nerves affected him. On the greens on Sunday, he's missing putts that he had made throughout the week and throughout last week. And then finally, he's just not able to get over the hump. I mean, it's hard, I think, for American fans to understand the pressure he faces in trying to win Japan's first male major. But Lav, you got to wonder. I mean, this is really neck and neck right now between him and Ricky for best player without a major. And you feel like the barrier in front of Hideki is maybe a little higher.
I do. And this is super inside baseball, but I basically spent most of Sunday gathering for what I expected to be a Hideki Matsuyama major victory and what that would mean for Japanese golf. From everything that I gathered and could tell, the expectation has been placed on him ever since he became a full-time player on the PGA Tour in 2014. However, Hideki and his manager / interpreter / fix-it man, Bob Turner, who's, you know, he's kind of been in the spotlight because he's with every interview with Hideki, he maintains that Hideki does not think about this, that you can ask him all he wants, but he doesn't really think about, you know, what it would mean to be the first male player from Japan to win a major. His results would suggest otherwise.
It seems like it would be impossible not to think about it. I mean, guys completely unrelated to Hideki Matsuyama every week get asked questions from the Japanese press about Hideki Matsuyama. And that's to say nothing of the individual attention he gets every week, no matter, you know, whether it's the PGA Championship or, you know, a far lesser event, let's call it. Yes, I think he's got a lot more pressure than Ricky Fowler. Sure, Ricky faces the pressure of being, you know, very popular amongst kids, being a marketing icon, but Hideki's got the weight of an entire nation on his shoulders. And when you've got, you know, maybe a balky putter and you're putting on grainy Bermuda greens, suddenly that weight will weigh on you even more.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe it's not, but the two times that Hideki threatened the lead over the weekend, he went bogey-bogey on the 12th hole and 13th hole on Saturday, and In the final round, he made bogey after missing, what, a four-footer on 11, added bogeys on 12 and 13, and then when he had some chance to apply some pressure on Thomas on 16, he missed that one too. So maybe it's just a coincidence that he's making these mistakes under the gun when he's thinking about what it could mean to win a men's major. Maybe it's not. Who knows?
So we came into the season's final major with basically two storylines, 1A and 1B, in terms of Jordan Spieth going for the career Grand Slam and then Rory McIlroy trying to dominate Quail Hollow as he has so many times before. So I guess let's take those in order. Spieth just really was never a factor. Tied for 28th, played good, not great. After the final round, he said that it was up to his putting that has been phenomenal in winning the Travelers and the Open, and it just wasn't quite there. But I thought it was interesting, Lav, in what he said Saturday, that basically he said, when you look at my Wikipedia page 30 years from now, the PGA is going to be the one where I struggle the most. Now, it's easy to say that right now because that's the one leg of the career Grand Slam that he doesn't have, but he kind of pointed to just how these courses are set up and not necessarily that they don't favor his game, but he looks at the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the Open, and he feels like those really accentuate parts of his game that he likes to lean on, and the PGA Championship doesn't. I think that everyone agrees that he's going to get the PGA Championship eventually.
Could be next year.
Could be next year at Belle Reve. But I guess, what are your takeaways from Spieth now 0-for-1 on trying to get the career Grand Slam?
I didn't expect him to win this one. It just wasn't going to happen this week. Quail Hollow is a brutally difficult golf course. He's only played it once, and he didn't play particularly well in 2013. He just doesn't drive it straight enough right now. He just doesn't have command of his driver to try and fit it in those wide corridors and try and make birdie from there. I did find that comment, though, on Saturday curious. Obviously, his record at Augusta speaks for itself, and I do think, you know, he'll have some success in the Open Championship just because he does have the creativity around the greens, and you know, certainly at a course like Birkdale, driving accuracy isn't that important. I think over the course of his career, if he's looking back in the next 20 years, he'll struggle more at the U.S. Open
yeah.
I mean, than the PGA Championship. PGA Championship is typically a shootout. He makes a lot of birdies. He can rely on his putting. U.S. Open, I mean, you're hitting the fairway, you're hitting the green, and Jordan Spieth is not traditionally a very accurate driver of the golf ball.
I mean, he got away with one at Chambers Bay, a deserved winner, but...
But there's no rough at Chambers Bay.
Right. And how many times are they going to go to those courses? I think that every now and then you're going to have a Whistling Straits PGA Championship where things will thrive for him. Nick, what are your thoughts on Spieth as we turn the page to 2018?
I thought it was a little early for him to hit the panic button on his career at the PGA Championship for, you know, all the reasons just mentioned. But also, you know, it's 0-for-1. I think it was
not going to happen this year.
No, there's, you know, there it would have been no lovely. It would have been a great storyline, and he wouldn't have had to answer questions about it for the next year or 5 years, 10 years, whatever it's going to be before he, you know, nabs the last leg of the career Grand Slam. But it just seemed like a curious comment to make on a Saturday in your first attempt to try to round this thing out. And maybe it's a case of him just getting in his own head a little bit. But
and we can give him credit for actually admitting this instead of just playing.
Sure, clearly.
Not, yeah.
Well, clearly it's weighing on his mind. Otherwise, yes, it wouldn't randomly come out like that. Yeah. I just thought it was rather curious timing for a guy who's only tried this once to say, you know, 30 years from now, if we look back, I think the PGA will be my weakest. It didn't make much sense to me for the reasons we just discussed, and I think we'll get it sooner rather than later. We just mentioned Belle Reve. It's not out of the question to think he could get this in a year.
Well, I do think it's interesting that basically for the three of us, the only player who's gotten to the career Grand Slam in our lifetime is Tiger, and he did it in his first try at St. Andrews in 2000. So this is a new storyline for us. We're seeing it kind of develop with Phil at the U.S. Open, with Rory.
Spieth traditionally has a three-year window. He gets three cracks at it. The five players who have won the career Grand Slam, they required no more than three tries. That would suggest that the longer you go without getting it, the more pressure, and then you're in trouble.
Would that also suggest that Rory will not win the Masters? Because I think we're getting to that point.
I would suggest that he's getting close to being in trouble at the Masters.
That it is very quickly going to become a thing to where Ernie Els was supposed to win one, David Duval was supposed to win one. A lot of guys
completely
were supposed to
agree.
Win a Masters and didn't.
Three is the magic number. Well, so maybe it's Belle Reve. What's in 2019?
Beth Page in May. He'll be there in May.
Okay, I don't like Jordan Spieth to Beth Page either.
So Bellerive, you're pushing.
Bellerive it is.
You're pushing
Bellerive, on, you know, Bellerive, here we come.
There you go. So let's talk about Rory, who may or may not ever win a Masters. But right now, he is leaving the PGA with more questions than answers. It's a frustrating year for Rory, and it's not going to get any better. I mean, his comments, I was down there in his post-round presser. He is very frustrated. He's still dealing with pain from this rib injury. He's now talking about possibly hanging it up, maybe skipping the FedEx Cup playoffs, possibly the race to Dubai. He's putting the focus on the 2018 Masters, but Lav, this is just really quickly turning into a lost season for a guy who was supposed to be the player to watch this week.
Oh, it's completely a lost year, and really disappointing, especially since, man, you remember the South African Open, how good he looked, how high our expectations were for him coming into 2017. It's just been a bust. Personally, I do hope that he sits out these next 4 months. It sucks for us who have to cover golf and want him to be part of the storyline. I like to see him sit out until maybe the Middle East swing in the European Tour early next year, just to get his mind right, get his body right. I do find it curious, though. I mean, he came in here with back-to-back top five finishes. It's not like he's been hacking all over the place. He didn't seem to be in pain. He wasn't stretching. He wasn't grimacing. I'm not sure if that's just a convenient excuse for not playing well and just kind of having a disappointing major season, or if he actually is in pain. I'm assuming he's not lying. I think we have to take him at his word. But I don't know. He seemed to be playing well enough to win this PGA Championship. He just didn't get it done this week.
He had mentioned that he doesn't feel much pain as he's playing and progressing through his round, but that the rib is sort of preventing him from practicing as often or as hard as he would like to, so maybe that's why his game isn't as sharp. But 2 weeks in a row now, we've seen him absolutely overpower both Firestone and Quail Hollow off the tee.
Can't hit a wide shot.
Yeah, only for him to still not score well. And so, you know, he's playing as good as he can with the driver, and it's not translating into lower scores. I'm with you. I would like to see him take time off. He doesn't have a lot to prove in terms of the FedEx Cup or the race to Dubai.
He's won them both.
At this point, based on the conversation we just had, the only thing we're going to be judging him on is what he does next year in April at Augusta. And then, you know, from there, the U.S. Open, the British, and the PGA. So if we're only judging this guy based on the major championships, I think he should just take the fall off, get the mind and the body right, and we'll see him in January.
And the rib talk is curious as well, because he can go full bore with the driver and hit 350, but he can't hit a wedge shot when he's dialing back on the speed and the velocity with which he's swinging.
Well, if we're taking him at face value, it's a macro issue of, and this happens with a lot of players, of I want to practice, and then when I practiced in order to get my game where it needs to be, the practice is what does me in, and that those are the issues that he's running into. He said, sitting there 20 minutes after his round, he said that his muscle was spasming, he was having numbness in his left arm, that there were a lot of issues that, If those are the symptoms, that it sounds pretty serious.
Yeah.
But we shall see. I agree with you, Lav. It's pretty much a lost year.
Disappointing.
Which is
really,
not
this was exactly what he did not need.
Yes.
You know, Jordan Spieth gets a third major. He's coming closer, and Rory had a big head start on him.
Dustin Johnson establishing himself as number one.
Yep.
All that stuff.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want to turn our attention very quickly here to a former world number one who I spoke to today. Jason Day hit one of the craziest and possibly stupidest shots I have ever seen in a major championship, trying to hit what he described as a low bullet hook. Lav, is this in your arsenal where you're on the pine straw, you have no follow through because there's a tree trunk right in front of you? He said he wanted to hit a low bullet hook around the trees, up basically near the green. I'm thinking of the MJ Larry Bird commercials where he's calling bank nothing but net off the stadium scoreboard, basically. And then he stood by it after the final round. He said, 9 times out of 10, I've got that shot. I hit it in the junk a lot, but I get it out of the junk a lot too. And he had no regrets other than the outcome about a shot that led to a quadruple bogey in the final round and basically sunk his chances of winning a major.
If you chip that out left, you make 5 at worst, and you're still in the golf tournament. If you try the hero shot and you send it straight right into the bushes and you need an unplayable, and then you chunk from there, and then you chunk from there, so on and so forth, you lose the golf tournament. Cole Swatton should have been saying, what the hell are you even thinking trying this golf shot? Chip it out in the fairway, and rely on your wedge game, which is pretty darn good, maybe you get up and down and you can save par. That is the most mind-boggling decision of the week by far, but just shows you how desperate he is to try and win a major, try and get back to that world number one spot. That's what that decision told me.
When I heard him say that 9 times out of 10 I can pull it off, the first thing that came to mind was 60% of the time it works every time, which is obviously not a ringing endorsement. I will say that the only shot I have in my bag is a low bullet hook off the pine straw, but I'm also not trying to win a major championship, nor will I ever. It was clearly ill-advised. He plays his last 2 holes on Saturday in 5 over, and he basically ruins, 53 holes of excellent major championship work with one decision. I'm with you. I think your caddy at that point needs to call. You know, what Spieth and Mickelson both talk about, the yearly veto. I think it's time to institute one for Jason Day.
For sure.
To play devil's advocate here for a minute, Day did say, basically, he said, first of all, the chip out was no bargain, that you had water long. If you come up short,
I'll take my chances on the chip out.
Out of there, you got bunker and rough. But, I agree with you. It was strange, but I do.
I'm going to trust the PGA Tour player to be able to hit a chip out.
I do admire the fact that there is something to be said about these guys where it's like, I'm never allowed to be wrong. Whenever you talk to anyone, even you talk to Ricky about his finish on Saturday, he said, well, the wind blew and I hit a good shot, but on 17 it goes in the water. We didn't think water was in play. I 3-putt 16 and 18, and, you know, I've been putting well all week, and those are just unfortunate 3-putts. Part of that is you need that sort of positivity to be able to get yourself to a level of confidence to win these tournaments, but part of it also just leaves you kind of scratch your head, being like, can't you just at some point just take the L and say, man, I really probably shouldn't hit that shot.
That's much too damaging to the psyche to take an L like that.
Imagine if Spieth had to take the L at Birkdale.
Ooh.
How things might have
been. Oh, if he just tried to pitch back into the fairway.
Yes. All right, let's do some rapid fire here at the end. We mentioned Mickelson.
Ooh, rapid fire.
Rapid fire, exactly. Well, you know, I know you've got a bedtime here at some point, Vlad. Are we going to get you there?
2 hours ago.
We mentioned Phil Mickelson, who missed the cut in wildly disastrous fashion. Second straight major. Two parts here. First of all, what do we make of the post-Bones experiment where he's saying that he doesn't miss Bones, but he also can't visualize a shot? And then also, do we still think he's a lock to get a pick for the President's Cup, currently 17th in the team standings?
To answer your first question, it's amazing what Bones did for Phil in terms of keeping him on the rails and keeping him invested in each and every tournament round. He looks just completely lost, and I have no confidence that he's going to turn that around anytime soon, which is why, to answer your second question, Steve Stricker shouldn't even be considering Phil at this point. He's got one top 10 in a full field stroke play event since last October. He's just not one of the 12 best American golfers right now.
Phil Mickelson hasn't not been part of an American team since
22 years.
Yeah, since 1994. We're talking about the early days of the Clinton administration. So Steve Stricker is going to find himself in an incredibly awkward spot. He has 11 guys that he can probably count on. And then Phil, for whatever reason, really does sort of raises his game in these international events. He loves them. He likes the camaraderie. He likes being in the locker room.
This isn't a ceremonial position.
I understand that. And I don't necessarily disagree with you that he's not deserving of the spot. I just think it's going to be hard for Stricker to say no to him. And I think he winds up on that team regardless.
You got to cut the cord at some point.
If he shows even a flash of form in the next 2 weeks, he's on that team.
And I'm not convinced he's going to.
Well, he may not, but I also think that this is the one. I agree with Nick that you don't want to be the captain that leaves him off. Stricker,
we could be doing this till 2027.
No, he'll be a captain before then, and he'll probably pick himself. But the point is that every comment from Stricker so far has been like, "Yeah, I really would like to have Phil,
please show me something."
Yeah, he's got to cover his bases. My point is, this is the President's Cup. If this is a Ryder Cup, it would be a totally different situation. This U.S. team is set to smoke the international. It is a totally...
Just like every year,
but it's a totally stacked team, and it allows them the wiggle room to spend a pick on Phil, to let him have one more chance, and then if he goes really 2 years without form, then it makes it easier for Furyk not to pick him for Paris on a road game next year.
This is just bringing up all of my Walker Cup qualms and how it's just a ceremonial team, and... Are you trying to win? Are you trying to field the 12 best players? Or are you trying to make some kind of statement and prolong friendships? cut the cord at some point. Phil does not deserve a pick unless he shows something the next couple weeks. He's still, what, 17th on the points?
He hasn't been terrible.
He's had a decent
He's had a decent season until
bring back Bones.
Basically until he split with Bones, and then he missed the cut at Birkdale and at Quail Hollow. But anyway, I don't want to get you too fired up here before
this wasn't before rapid bed. Fire.
Yes,
now I'm all fired up.
Yes. What do we make of Kevin Kisner? He comes into the day with a one-shot lead. He challenges. He hits an ill-advised shot on the par 5 7th there that goes in the water. Doesn't really have what it takes to close on the back nine today. You know, what are your thoughts on Kisner overall? Do you see him potentially getting a major at some point?
Can we pour some out for Rex Hoggard?
We can. Our dearly departed colleague who is...
Our beloved colleague.
Heading down I-77 as well.
went 2 hours to Palmetto. Kisner had a one-shot lead. It was going to be a great story. He's going to camp out there all afternoon, getting the kind of vibe inside the clubhouse. Man, all these guys are pulling for Kis. Kis was a non-story for about the last 3 hours of this tournament. To be honest, I was shocked that he was even in contention at a golf course like Quail Hollow, which is what we thought was going to be a bomber's paradise and turned out to be with Justin Thomas winning. I do think he has the goods. I think he's got the fight. I think he's got the grit. It just needs to be the perfect golf course for him. Quail Hollow was not it.
No. And, you know, he survived as long as he did. He ratcheted up to the top of the leaderboard based on his putting. I mean, he loves putting Bermuda greens. These are grainy. They're fast. So he had that advantage. But you could see, starting with that swing he made on 16 on Saturday afternoon, he saw water and he started going towards it. The only reason he wasn't back in the water Saturday afternoon at 18 was because he got saved by that stone bridge. But then 7 today, back in the water. And, of course, once his chances are over at 18, he's right back in the creek on the left. He's scrappy. He continues to put himself in these positions. He's lost 2 PGA Tour playoffs. He's got a host of runner-ups. I think he's going to continue to knock on the door. He's going to get more PGA Tour titles. He'll probably contend in another major, but you're right. It's going to need to be at a golf course that suits him a little bit better than just on the greens.
Yeah, I mean, he was giving up 3 or 4 clubs to some of the bombers on that golf course. That's just not going to work.
Last one, and then we'll let you guys get some beauty rest here. We're now, since it's Monday, we're 234 days away from the Masters and the next major in 2018. So taking Augusta National out of the equation, which of the three majors in 2018 are you most looking forward to? We've got the U.S. Open going to Shinnecock. We're heading to Carnoustie for the Open. We're going to Bellerive in St. Louis for the final August PGA Championship. Lav, let's let you kick it off. Which of the three is highest on your list?
I am certainly not looking forward to the PGA Championship in St. Louis in August. Will be one fond farewell to the August.
We just made it through a week in Charlotte with only, as John Deaver from the PGA of America pointed out, only 103 minutes of rain delays for the entire week. That is
miracle.
Absolute miracle. The fact that they don't have more egg on their face for starting the leaders at 2:45 on Sunday afternoon with a terrible weather forecast that, again, for the second year in a row, they got absolutely lucky. Whatever they're doing with the weather gods, I'm a fan of.
Shout out to Larry Sprinkle. Yes, that is his real name, the weatherman in Charlotte. He called 80% chance of thunderstorms here on Sunday. Didn't even
not as close. Yeah, there were barely a cloud.
To answer your question,
yes,
I'm looking forward to Shinnecock the most. We're looking at the disaster from 2004. Has the USGA learned their lesson? Aaron Hills was just a catastrophe because everyone's all up in arms about how great the scoring was. You're not going to see that at Shinnecock. I think it returns to the deep rough, the narrow fairways, the rock hard fast greens that we all have become accustomed to. I think it's going to be a great U.S. Open.
The carnage that we had at Quail Hollow will once again come back at Shinnecock.
Rear its ugly and yet beautiful head.
Nick, we've got Shinnecock, Carnoustie, Bellerive. What's your pick?
I, too, will go with Shinnecock. I just remember in 2004 the seventh green being the travesty of the week.
The hand-watering.
Absolutely burn out those greens. And yet Retief Goosen managed to navigate the back nine with fewer putts than holes played, I believe, or something at least close to it. I'd like to see that golf course get a fair shake just because, you know, what, now more than a decade later, we're still talking about how poorly that golf course came off in 2004. So it'd be nice to get a traditional U.S. Open venue and one that hopefully you know, they make better use of the golf course than they did in 2004.
Well, the countdown is on now. The major season of 2017 is over. 2018 will be here before we know it, although there is at least a fair amount of interesting and certainly lucrative golf to be played before we close out the year. But Ryan Lavner, Nick Menta, thank you much for joining me here. It's been a fun and crazy week in Charlotte. I'm sure in the time it's taken us to tape this podcast, Justin Thomas has put four new Snapchats into the interwebs with him and the Wanamaker Trophy.
What does the Wanamaker Trophy hold, 52 beers?
It's something like that.
He's probably going to test it.
Rich Beam set it up in terms of beers. I think that what Daniel Berger said, he was going to do it with Tito's Vodka, which that sounds dangerous. Sounds just dangerous.
That sounds like a hospital stay waiting to happen.
Yeah, so maybe SB2K18 will feature a trophy challenge between the Claret Jug and the Wanamaker Trophy. I don't know, but we shall see. But Justin Thomas, officially a major champion. The week is in the books at Quail Hollow Club for the 99th PGA. Ryan Lavner, Nick Menta, thanks for joining me. I'm your host, Will Gray. Thanks for listening to this Golf Channel podcast, and we'll see you next time.